The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 928. It's the 20th of November 2017. On the podcast today, I have Andy Hollingworth, CEO of Toople.com. That's T-O-O-P. And Andy goes over their recent trading update. Also on the podcast, John Prideaux, CEO of Boku, which floated today, explains the business and strategy going forward. Plus, I also have Malki, Oil and Gas Sector Authority, talking about the following stocks: Savannah Petroleum, SAVP, SDX Energy, SDX, President Energy, PPC, Wentworth Resources, WRL, Premier Oil, PMO, and Zenith Energy, ZEN. Plus, financial analyst or market analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talks about companies that are releasing updates this week, including Entertainment One, that's Pig World, or your pet pig, Thomas Cook Group, TCG, and Mothercare, MTC. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andy Hollingworth, CEO of Toople. That's T-O-O-P. Andy, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Now, you've had a trading statement out. Looks quite positive, and we'll get into that in a bit. Before we do, Andy, for people are not aware of what Toople do, give them a brief summary of the business, please.
Yes, certainly. Toople.com is an online-first business built for small businesses of less than 50 employees to be able to get online instant quotes, chat to agents for telecom solutions from data connectivity like broadband, fiber broadband and Ethernet connectivity through to the hosted cloud voice and office phone systems. And obviously mobile SIMs and mobile handsets as well. The DNA and the values of Toople is fixed price for the life of the contract, no hidden charges, and a complete transparency in pricing. So that small businesses, certainly in economic times of uncertainty, can absolutely budget with no hidden surprises, and all backed up by a great UK on-base customer experience.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, like I said, a trading statement released recently, and it's looking quite positive. I'm seeing a couple of double-digit percentage gains. So take us through the figures, Andy, if you could.
Yeah, I think we're really pleased with yesterday's trading statement. Customer orders are growing month on month since the finessing and the launch of our own digital marketing activity. Even more pleasing, as well as obviously customer order growth month on month and more customers joining every month, is the growth in the cloud-based business phone proposition that we launched early in 2017. This has rapidly become our highest growth product, and also it's our highest margin proposition. And that's driven by the fact that customers take more services when they're ordering this, and they sign longer contracts. So it's a great proposition. It's built on one of the global leading hosted voice platforms in the world. And certainly the customer experience and the ability to fix the cost of voice with brand new telephony and mobility is really providing customers with a great platform that's future-proofed. Mm-hmm. On the back of that, with the digital marketing, we're now generating more leads and more inquiries from customers than ever before. Our lead generation is up 100% since June, and we're converting, of all the leads that we generate on a monthly basis, we're converting 43% of those into orders, which is clearly driving the growth.
Yeah, that's a heck of a conversion rate. You must be very pleased with that, mustn't you?
I think absolutely. 43% demonstrates that we've got some great disruptive propositions in the market. We obviously speak a language and a transparency that the customers are buying into, because we must always remember that Tuple.com is still a new and an unknown brand. So to drive 43% conversion of all the inquiries is an absolutely fantastic, rock-solid start, and we can do more.
Yeah, and you said, despite the competitive market you mentioned there, you know, monthly revenues have consistently exceeded 100 grand a month, which is good going, isn't it?
Yeah, revenue is positive, as obviously we have more orders and we have more customers every single week and every single month. The revenue projections look solid, and there'll be more about that obviously in our end of years, which we're looking to do early January for the period up to the 30th of September.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, so yeah, exactly. So what's next then, Andy?
The big job of work now for the next 60 days, as we stated in our trading statement yesterday, is transitioning the sales team now from an outsourced relationship to in-house over the next 60 days. Why are we doing that? We're doing that for a number of reasons. A lower cost base for the business allows us by having our own people and experienced telecoms people that are coming into the team, the in-house team, we can move from a blend of transactional selling to more consultative selling. The net result of that is that when we speak to these customers and we convert these customers, we can take these customers on a journey where the net result will be more orders and more services per customer on each order. And that obviously then will drive the gross margin and drive the net worth per customer. And then overall, we get a better ownership of the complete sales cycle and ensuring that we drive the right customer experience that our Trustpilot scores support at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got to point out, you've got these revenues here and you're a market cap just a little bit north of 2 million. So, you know, it doesn't take a lot to move that needle. But OK, so if someone's listening to this, Andy, and they're not yet, don't have you on the watch list and not following the story yet, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please.
Certainly. Reason one, we are a growing and a very, very scalable business for further growth. Number two, we have a customer base which is contracted with recurring annualised revenues. And number three, we've been fortunate to assemble a leadership team with well over 30 years track record of growth within our segment and our sector.
Andy, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for your time, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Prideau, Chief Executive Officer of Boku. That's B-O-K-U. John, thanks for joining me.
Yep, well, happy to be here.
It's a very exciting day for you. Listed today on the stock exchange, and of course, not many people would have heard of you if investors in listed companies. So, John, give us a brief summary as to what the business is all about, please.
Well, we allow people to buy things and charge it to their mobile phone, and that can be a prepaid phone or a postpaid phone. And the reason that our customers come to us, and we have customers the likes of Apple, Sony, Spotify, Microsoft, Google, Facebook, Riot Games that make League of Legends, so quite a few sort of well-known digital companies. The reason they come to us is that they find that because it's easier to buy something on your phone with your phone number, they just acquire more paying users as a result. So we're effectively a customer acquisition engine for the companies that we work with, and that's kind of what we do.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I've been to your website and I was quite impressed in big type there. It says you can reach more new customers than Facebook or Visa.
Well, it is. It's quite something, isn't it? There's not many companies that, because I'll sit here and tell you with a straight face, that they can access 5 billion users. And the fact is there are 5 billion users with mobile phones. And the problem for anybody trying to get access to them is those users just being fragmented in different islands of mobile network operators. And what Boku does is provides a simple way through one interface for a company like, you know, Microsoft or, you know, Tencent, Riot Games, to be able to make one connection to us and then, in theory, reach through to mobile network operators around the world, allowing them to, you know, to serve up, you know, their particular billing systems, authentication systems, the rest, and make them useful to, you know, the likes of the companies who are our customers. And you know, 5 billion phones, you know, plays against about 2 billion users of Facebook. You know, there really is a bit of a quantitative advantage there.
Yeah, but do you know what? It's taken me a little bit of time to get my head around the potential here. But of course, I mean, for example, as now, if I want to buy something, I probably go somewhere and then go to PayPal maybe or whatever online or put my credit card in. But when you think of it now, there's so many people in the world that don't have PayPal or they don't have a credit card or debit card. But what they do have is a mobile phone, doesn't matter where they are, you know, in developed countries or undeveloped countries. And so as long as they've got that phone, they can pay for goods and services. And so, yeah, the 5 billion market's huge. And so, I mean, is this an active, it must be quite an active space, isn't it? A very competitive space.
Well, it's active in the sense that, you know, we're growing certainly very fast. I mean, the history of being able to buy things and charge it to your mobile phone has been one of potential for a long time, but now that potential is turning into reality. I mean, our revenues are growing. In fact, our Q3 revenue was 44% up on where it was the same period last year, and that's really sort of helping to sustain it. And that's mostly coming from the sort of companies I was talking about rolling out in greater numbers and to new territories. And one thing that maybe sort of underlying your question is, you know, is this just a product for people who have no other way to pay? And the answer is, it actually isn't. I mean, one of the things that's extraordinary here is we're seeing great success in territories like Japan, in Taiwan, in Germany, the UK, countries where people have bank accounts, but it's the convenience of just being able to sort of tap once in order to subscribe, tap once in order to buy something, which is really driving a lot of our growth in those markets.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I'm not saying that's the only market. I'm saying that is a market as well that people haven't been able to tap before, but you can tap that. Plus, you've got the existing market, which is quite exciting. So am I correct in saying you're raising, what, £45 million? Is that right?
Well, the total offering size is £45 million. Mm-hmm. 15 of that is for the company, and 30 is a secondary sale from some existing shareholders, and are mostly sort of angels who have been in the company for some time, or if you like, investors that we had acquired. So we have done some acquisitions over the years, mostly for paper, and some of those shareholders are taking the opportunity to sell on to new investors. And we're delighted with the response that we got. I mean, honestly, it's the first day here on the exchange, and it absolutely is, and it's the first time I've been through a float, and it's just been really, really gratifying to get the level of response we've got and the quality of investors we have on the book. It is a great thing for us.
Yeah, and so can you go through some of the, you mentioned the growth there over 40% in revenue. So what are the revenue figures like at the moment?
In last year, we did something over $17 million or so. The analysts were projecting that we would do about $21.7 million for this year in total. So that gives you a sense of the scale of the business and, you know, the growth that we're experiencing. We are confident in the numbers that the analyst has put out, and we would hope to obviously deliver on the sort of figures that are being projected for us.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, I ask companies, you know, what's the market like? I mean, we know the market; it's a massive market. You know, the mobile market is huge. It's you know, pretty much everyone in the world has a mobile phone. So the market is huge. And so, you mentioned it there, but I mean, you must be one of the big players here. I mean, are they bigger? I mean, there's obviously smaller. But I mean, growth going forward, is it just organic, or are you thinking of acquisitions? Or what's the strategy, John?
Well, let's just talk about size first of all. I mean, it is true. Size matters in the payments business. I mean, size matters because it allows you to be two things at the same time. You can be at one and the same time the low-cost player, because if you have lots of transactions going over what's essentially a fixed cost platform, you can get your cost per transaction down low. But at the same time, if you're big, you can spend a lot and have a big cost base that allows you to have the widest possible functionality. And these things feed in on themselves. You have the widest possible functionality. New customers who want new things will inevitably come to you. And that sort of leads to a degree of carrier preference. It means you have more data that enables you to optimize your transactions better, not just optimizing and say a sort of a mono merchant sort of monoculture, but across multi-merchants with a massive data set. And all of these things mean that, you know, with our scale, you know, we become a very tough company to compete with. It's tough to compete with us on price because we have the lowest cost per transaction. It's tough to compete with us on function because we've probably already built it. If we haven't, You know, we've got a cost base that can support 80, 87 or so technical staff. And so we'll be able to build it very quickly. And because we have, you know, the volume, we can optimize things better through the data. So that's, you know, been important for us to be big. Now, you ask about acquisitions. I mean, we don't have a sort of shopping list of acquisitions. We're very happy with our level of organic growth. But at the same time, if opportunities arise, then, you know, we'll look at it. We have a track record of being able to do acquisitions. Back in 2014, you know, Boku acquired what was then its largest competitor, a company called MoPay. It does take a lot of time and effort to do acquisitions and to make them successful. There's a lot of, you know, talk of people doing acquisitions, but we would be, you know, measured in our approach as far as acquisitions are concerned. Doing it, it was only in the best interest of shareholders and at a pace we thought the company and its culture could digest.
Yeah, yeah, excellent stuff. And as far as, you know, obviously a huge milestone today, listing. And what's the next sort of big milestone, John, you're looking forward to for the company?
Well, I think the next big milestone will be a first full year of profitability. I mean, we've been through a process where we've been looking at sort of measurement of our business at some point in terms of total payment volume or TPV. And we switched that very much over towards revenue. And we were delighted to be able to hit in September of this year a so-called EBITDA break even. Now, you know, the accountants will tell you, well, EBITDA break-even is EBIT, you know, is not profitability per se, but clearly we're very much looking forward to trying to get our company to the point of profitability and further growth. So that's, you know, one of the metrics that as a management team we're very much focused upon.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, John, if someone's listening right now, and I doubt whether they are following you on Vox because you're brand new listed today, but they like the sound of the story, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please.
Well, I think we're an interesting company to look at because the fundamentals behind our business are great. So we're operating in a great market. It's growing, it's mobile, it's digitally distributed content. And so that's got to be good news for us as an investment. We've had a great deal of interest from the market overall with leading investors like River and Mercantile, Legal & General, Schroders coming onto our register. And if they kind of know what they're doing, that would also be something good to look at. And just think fundamentally, we are in for an interesting ride. We're a company that's growing very fast. And hopefully we'll represent someone who's worth understanding our news because we'll have a good amount of news flow to come in the future.
Excellent, John. Good to chat to you. And like you said, you've got hopefully lots of news in the future. So hopefully we'll chat again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for the time as well. I very much appreciated the conversation. And once again, Justin, would look forward to chatting to you again in the future.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Oil and Gas Sector Authority. It's Malky. You're right, fella?
Yeah, very well. Thanks, Justin. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. I always like to see Monday. Sometimes Mondays can, you know, it's almost like, is the market open sometimes? But today, some of my stocks are really kicked alive and quite buoyant. And I quite like to see that on a Monday morning, you know. So it's looking quite good. I know some people think, well, I do as well. I think we're at market highs here at the moment, aren't we? Or close to it. I'm thinking, are we due a correction, you know? And I think it's hard to just, and I often think, don't try and judge the macro market. You know, look at individual stocks. It's a stock market, but it's a market of stocks. And I think if you pick pick the right ones, you're fine, you know? Anyway, what are we chatting about today, Malky?
Well, we've had some exciting news from a number of our favourites in the last few days. I'm going to talk about Savannah, which is important to a lot of people. SDX, President Wentworth, and a quick word on Premier.
Yes, well, Savannah, I've got to say, I do hold some shares in that, and that's Savannah Petroleum, by the way, not Savannah Resources, SAVP is the ticker, and they suspended a while back. It was looking very promising. It still sort of is, but it's been suspended longer than we expected, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, this deal has taken, it is such a huge deal that it's taken a very, very long time to get sorted out. And I think what they did was they announced last week that they have a lock-up agreement with the creditors and the company and providing a little bit of short-term cash because, first of all, they wanted shareholders to know that they hadn't forgotten about them. But it is a monumental deal. These are, you know, I hadn't realized, actually. I mean, even though I'd used to know Seven quite well when Petrofac were involved in it. But, you know, the the good news for shareholders of Savannah is that this is, you know, a significant bunch of assets, which in my view will transform Savannah. And I'm not a huge bull of Nigeria, but this is proper production plus a huge amount of upside. If they, I mean, they've got the chance to get involved in the SAA thing, which is OML's 438 and 41, which are not in the package, but could be if they look exciting enough. And that's at Savannah's call. There's going to be an equity issue, obviously, but the backers are, I'm sure that they've got some of the best backers in the industry, will be easy, that raise will be easy enough, because they're very supportive. And of course, the AIM admission document, which is what people are worried about, I think is well underway. This stock is scheduled to reappear in December, and from what I gather, especially looking at the house brokers' notes and my conversations, is that the shares will come back in December. So that was one of the panicky things that the market was worried about. So I think you can rule out that one. As I say, these are, what I would call materially strategic assets in the region. It's a substantial portfolio of production and exploration, plus a midstream business, which is very exciting. I love these midstream businesses. And I think he's getting it very cheaply indeed. So what I would say overall, Justin, on Savannah is, you know, you've been patient all this way. You've probably only got a month to wait now.
Yeah.
The announcement was in order to make sure that everyone knew that was the case. Because they've got creditors all over the place, the document, last week's document, was incredibly complicated. But you should bear it in mind as a sort of prospectus for the bonds, and therefore is technically complicated. For the equities, I think it'll be easy enough. There'll be a raise, properly supported. People will get the chance to take part. And I think that shareholders in Savannah should be very pleased about the way it's going.
Yeah. Well, no, just, you know what, I had confidence in the previous project here. They were talking about Andrew himself, because I know I always like to see a CEO with a lot of skin in the game, and he's got a lot of shares in the game himself. So he wouldn't do something, I think, that damaging to his own holding. So it's always a good thing there. So
yeah, I think he's got a short 10%, and what is more, he paid for it himself. It's not all the warrants and everything else. I think that there are very few CEOs in the industry who could have discovered a deal like this and then had the perseverance and the time this must have taken to get this deal ready and across the line and everything else. You know, the energy he must have expended in this is quite phenomenal.
Okay. Well, looking forward to that before Christmas. Be a nice Christmas present there. Okay, so what's next, Malky?
SDX have had two announcements, one this time last week and one this morning. And the news at SDX it just goes from strength to strength, really.
Yeah, I feel the share price is lagging a bit here on the news.
It shouldn't be, really, because they keep announcing discoveries. So they announced this discovery last week at the KSR-15 well in the Cebu prospect, which is now already being connected to infrastructure, and that'll be plugged in and selling before very long. It's certainly being connected up, but these things only take a few weeks. Mm-hmm. The 14 well, which has now already been tested, and it's on flow rate of something like 6.5 million scuffs a day, which is ahead of expectations, and also already meeting customer demands. Production rates are good enough for all existing customer demands, and to increase sales and the target. The target for SDX is to increase sales to their customers by 2018, an increase of 50%. I think that what they're playing here is a very careful game. They're not whacking it out so much. They're making sure that they can deliver these wells straight away. They're near to infrastructure, so, you know, bosh, make a discovery on a development well, produce enough to be able to make sure the customers get it straight away, and then build up production so that you can add new customers and increase production to existing customers as well. Mm-hmm. I think you'll find that things like Circle before promised a huge amount and didn't deliver. And I think what Paul Welsh is doing here is that means that they can deliver good well results, get production up and running, and potential new clients and existing clients will be filled in with gas over the next few months. I mean, what's not to like about this progress? And I think, as you say, last time I looked at the shares, about 51p. They should be a lot higher, Justin.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It's almost like in the chart. If it keeps hitting or testing that 55 pence resistance, and it's in a range here, and I think, you know, once it breaks it or closes above that 55 pence, because it hasn't done that for, like, since sort of June time. Once it does that, I think it's good to go. But it's almost you can put a price alert on that, and if it closes the day above that price, it's going to make a move higher. But it's just consolidating, you know, at the moment. And the shares do that for a while, don't they? They consolidate, trade in range, and then they break out then. So
I think we'll just get continued good news from this company on a sort of week-by-week almost basis. And and so I think, you know, very much remains part of the list.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what's next, Malky?
Quick word on President, because I know you interviewed Peter Levine, so did I. A few weeks ago, they had an update on Puesto Flores in Argentina last week. Now, this is exciting because, to be honest, this was the part of the acreage that they bought recently from Chevron, where Chevron are selling some of their smaller pieces of acreage in order to buy in Argentina in the Vaca Muerta, which is a big unconventional play. So they've bought a fantastic package of acreage, and it's already flowing. So they announced last week that in the last month they've had over $3 million worth of cash proceeds from this this program, mm-hmm. which is incredible news. I mean, it's way more than they were getting before. The workover program has now been increased from 3 to 4 wells, they've said that the payback for the $2.2 million of capex is now going to be less than 12 months. So, you know, they've got production, which they're increasing all the time because of the workover wells. If they're producing $3 million dollars a month, that's incredible news. And the capex is, you know, it'll be returned, all their money will be returned within 12 months. You know, there's not much you couldn't like about this. You talk about Andrew not having money in the skin in the game, as you call it. Well, Peter Levine owns 30-something% of this business, which he's put in through thick and thin. He is absolutely determined, in his own words, to have profitable production with good margins and just carry on about the business. And with a recent raise at, was it 10p or what it was, I think these shares are very cheap indeed.
Yeah. Well, again, it's another case, like you said. You know, it's like Savannah Petroleum. Another guy there, you know, personally involved and put a lot of their own money into it, isn't it? You know, so it's always good to have that. You know.
Yeah.
All right. What's next, there, Malky?
A quick word on Wentworth, because they had an announcement last week, or two announcements last week, actually. But primarily the first one is that the production from Tanzania, from Nazi Bay, is 60 million scf a day. And as they get towards the end of the year, they're going to cruise past the guidance and will be producing at the top of that range. You know, this is starting to become a very strong player in the area. They've got potential customers from the big power generators as well as the industrial producers, very like in Cameroon for Victoria Oil and Gas. So, you know, the Tanzania play is looking much more solid than it ever was with production at those higher levels. And then, of course, you've got the Mozambique, where they're opening it up. It's an oil and gas play, potentially at 10 Jumbo to the second, well, the appraisal well on this prospect is going ahead next year. Pretty much whatever happens, they've already got things underway. They've ordered the long lead items. They're getting a rig on the go, and they've got some quite interested players in the data room, because they've got 80% of it or whatever, and which they intend to farm out a bit of. We might find somebody quite interesting in that data room, I think. I think Wentworth has been a slow burner. I've been watching it for ages, and people often sort of write and email and so on and say, you know, when are you going to press the button on this? Well, last week I sort of effectively pressed the button, because I think we can now see Tanzania in a very strong position with the gas production and the market, more importantly, the end market in the power generators and the industry, industrial producers, and with the potential upside of Mozambique. Tembo comes in and they get a half-decent partner. I think Mozambique could be very interesting indeed. So really beginning to get going at Wentworth. They did announce that they're moving, relocating from Calgary, probably to the UK, certainly to the the market over here. That makes a lot of sense. You know, if your asset is in Africa, Calgary is a hell of a long way away, and one of the joint CEOs lives in London anyway. He's the chairman. The MD lives in Calgary, so he'll stay in Calgary, and they'll find a new CEO. But that's all common sense for Wentworth.
Marvellous stuff. So it's WRL ticker. Anything else, Arky?
Quick word on Premier, because I think It would be wrong for me not to mention them. You know, I've held out a confidence in Premier through thick and thin, now it's quite thick. Things are doing, you know, pretty much across the board. They're continuing to, operationally, this company has been in a cracking position for some time. It was only, if you remember, that the $2.5 billion of debt, which doesn't help. Yeah. But actually, in terms of the way it looks at the moment, I think it's very strong. So guidance on production, which has been raised, you know, they're certainly hitting their production targets easily enough right now. That'll be increased dramatically when Catcher, which is their new development in the North Sea, comes on stream. I've penciled in Christmas Day for first oil for Catcher. That's a bit of a joke, but it certainly will be in December. And so that'll make a meaningful addition to their production in the North Sea. They've signed up a great gas deal in Vietnam for their tuna gas field, and I think that's really important. So that's good news for them. They've got this Mexican discovery, and they'll be appraising that in the second half of next year, we hope. All in all, with operating OPEX is down as usual, CAPEX is down. It is my view that Sea Lion, which is the discovery in the Falkland Islands, at $60-odd, I mean, the oil price was up again today, but at $60-odd a barrel, Sea Lion, in my view, goes ahead big time. And they're so far down the line that they've got a huge amount of the costs done at what I call low oil price costs. And you know, if they kick on soon, then they'll be able to develop it pretty cheaply at a time when oil prices, in my view, will still be quite strong. So they get the put and the call on that front. They're saying nothing quite rightly, but you know, I think that's just one of the added pluses for Premier Oil.
Yeah, you mentioned there that obviously the debt. You know, is it obviously being serviced? Is it okay? Is it a problem here or what?
Well, they completely redid all the debt, the covenants and the arrangements, pushed out the extent of the debt a little bit. And I think that the beginning of next year, I'm sure that next year they'll start to pay down the debt. This extra production will give them revenues that they can start to pay down. So, you know, they've had a holiday. It took them months and months to restructure this debt package. They got it all agreed with all the various debtors, and they're on the case now. And I think that you know, it's very positive. They'll be paying back debt next year. As I say, they'll be getting gas sales to Vietnam from Tuna. They'll be getting oil in at Catcher. I think that you know, the costs of the business have fallen. Tony Darrant has done a pretty good job there, I think. I stay in the bucket list.
Yeah, yeah, marvellous stuff. Excellent, Malky, thank you for that. Have a nice week, and we'll speak next week, fella.
I look forward to it. I'm in Azerbaijan for my sins this week.
All right. And I assume that's not holidaying. It's obviously working-wise, is it?
Yeah, it's not a holiday. I'm going to see Zenith Energy, which is quite an interesting...
Yeah, I was going to say, I've spoken to the main man there, Andrea Cattaneo, several times in the podcast. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see you, because a very oily area, isn't it? And
One of the historic places for oil discoveries. It takes a fair bit to get me out of my seat here to go on these things, but it looks really exciting. So when I got the opportunity, I decided to take it. I think that Zenith is just one for the pocketbook.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent. Malky, speak next week, fella.
Okay, cheers now.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is market analyst with Spreadix. It's Connor Campbell. You all right, Connor?
I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent stuff. So the week ahead, and there's some companies reporting, some companies of interest. So who are we starting with, Connor?
We've got Entertainment One. Their half-year figures are on Tuesday. It's had a very, very good year, I think. I think in maybe mid-November, maybe last week, the week before, it briefly crossed £3, more around the £2.95 mark, which I think is its best price in just over 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's done especially well in the last, since the second half of the year, really. In May, full-year figures were pretty good. Full-year revenue was up 35%, £1.1 billion. Pre-tax profit wasn't great. It fell 22%. To 37.2 million, but that was largely due to restructuring charges related to what they're doing with their film division at the moment. September, again, really strong update. Peppa Pig is sort of Entertainment One's shining star, I guess. It's in their family division. It's sort of the main thing that these earnings releases tend to focus on, and for good reason, really. In September, it revealed that in China, it was making really, really strong inroads in China. In the 2 years since they sort of launched Peppa Pig in China, it had seen 34 billion views on various social media sites in China, which that's a lot of views, which has helped sort of revenue for the brand be ahead of expectations. Obviously, all the licensing and merchandising activities around, a kids brand are huge. Mm-hmm. If you can tap into that China market, that's almost quite a literal goldmine, really.
Yeah, do you know what? I mean, they love pigs in China to the point where they kill millions every day, because obviously the pork is a big part of their dishes, And I'm just thinking, wow, isn't it funny they've now got... Maybe there may be an issue here, though, because they may hit their meat industry, because it's like, if they start loving this little carrot on the screen, how do they marry that with the fact that they kill so many every day, Anyway, but crack on, fella, go on.
Elsewhere, I think it revealed that sort of the content of its content library had risen 13% to $1.7 billion. That's mainly due to things like it produces Designated Survivor, which is a show in America with Kiefer Sutherland, very successful. Also got a new kids show called, I think, PJ Marks. Again, I think that's done quite well, and obviously anything in the family division is ripe for merchandising, which is obviously a huge money maker. Again, though, the film division was a disappointment. I think box office revenues for the films that Entertainment One have been involved in fell, I think, from $151 million to $82 million year on year, mainly due to like a weaker slate of films. However, it has got a few sort of big films in the second half of the year to look forward to going into Tuesday's half-year figures. It's got a Bad Mum's Christmas. Bad Mum's was a pretty successful film last year, obviously produced a sequel. Paddington 2, obviously that's doing very well over here at the moment.
It's good, I'd highly recommend that. No, honestly, I went to see that. I was really impressed with it. I went with the kids, obviously, but took the parents as well. And I saw Paddington 1, it was good, but this was even it exceeded this, and really was a nice film, so I think that'll be
I'm very keen to see it. And then I guess the other big film would be The Post, which is sort of Steven Spielberg's next big film. It's starring Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep, obviously going for Oscars, so it's got a decent lineup of films to perhaps help out the ailing film division. It's also, I think, merged its TV and digital and film production divisions. I think he was saying that no longer is it things that are strictly pinned for film or for TV, so it gives it a bit more fluidity, I think, in terms of defining or determining, where where the things that it's got in development ends up going. Also signed, I think, a deal recently with Wattpad, which is sort of like a fan fiction site. Mm-hmm. I think it's got, you know, like 400 million stories or something on there. And Entertainment One sort of signed a deal with Wattpad to mine those stories for any potential development deals, which, you know, isn't a bad idea, really. In terms of its half-year figures on Tuesday, I think the main issue will be that investors will want that pre-tax profit figure to bounce back after the restructuring charges sort of drag to the full-year figure down back in May. Any improvement in the film division, obviously, that would be welcome, considering that has been sort of the main issue for the company in the last few updates. And, you know, any good Peppa Pig news, you know, any further update on what sort of it intends to do with Peppa Pig's increased popularity in China, I think, you know, that'll be another sort of key focus for investors on Tuesday. Clients buying around the 290 mark, I think they're fairly happy with what Entertainment One is doing at the moment. And, you know, as long as it's got Peppa Pig going well, then it's always got something to sort of catch headlines with.
Yeah, well, listen to the stat, Connor, about pigs in China, right? In 2014, there will be almost twice as many pigs in China as there are people in America. They've got 1.2 billion pigs in China, pretty much.
That's bonkers.
That is bonkers. They eat a lot of them. They eat loads of them. So it'd be interesting to see if Peppa Pig you know, interrupts that relationship they have with the pig. Okay, cool. So that's ETO. What else? What's next, Connor?
Thomas Cook on Wednesday.
Yeah,
again, the stock has had a very good year. I think it's sort of at the start of September, it was trading at, I think, 26-month highs. Obviously, it had a very poor 2015-2016. Various issues, especially sort of various terrorist attacks around the world, especially, and, you know, military coup in Turkey, things like that, preventing holidaymakers from going to traditional holiday destinations. But there are signs that that is now turning around. Third quarter figures back in July, it said summer bookings were up 11% year-on-year. Sort of Greece, Cyprus and Bulgaria were three of the sort of the key growth destinations, perhaps picking up the slack lost by Turkey and places like Tunisia. But it also did say that demand for Turkey was starting to pick up once again, and that it was going to start, it was going to restart holidays to Tunisia, which would be the first time since sort of the beach attack, I think it was that in 2015. Revenue for the third quarter was up 14% to $2.27 billion, while its pre-tax losses more than halved to $31 million. So it was a pretty, you know, healthy update all in all. September, winter booked revenue was up 6%. It continued to say that it had seen an increase in demand for Turkey and North Africa, which is, again, good. You know, holiday makers returning to those sort of key destinations. Also, two interesting bits of news, really. It announced a deal with Expedia, which I think gives it access to, like, what was it? I think 60,000 additional hotels that it can offer in packages and stuff, while also it significantly reduces the cost of its sort of city breaks and hotels-only business, mm-hmm. which is, you know, nice bit of news there. And then it also announced, I think basically on the same day, a deal with Swiss group LMEY. As part of it, it bought a 42% stake in German hotel and sort of tour business, I think Aldiana, however you say it. And then also announced it was sort of creating a joint hotel investment platform. And that goes on from sort of what Thomas Cook had been saying earlier in the year, that it was trying to boost its portfolio of own brand hotels. So, you know, it's really expanding into that area. In terms of its full-year figures on Wednesday, more evidence of a pickup in demand in Turkey and North Africa, I think, will be key. That's sort of what's helped its stock price along in the last few months. And, you know, any turnaround in pre-tax profit, if you can post a pre-tax profit rather than a pre-tax loss, obviously that'll be very happy. And then, you know, as with all holiday stocks, just what its current performance is in, you know, terms of the season, how much is it sold in terms of its winter business. From a client's perspective, they've been buying around the 125 mark. I think they're happy with how it's doing. You know, the issues that had plagued it in the last couple of years seem to be dissipating. There's every chance that if demand in Turkey and North Africa can substantially pick up and perhaps get towards the levels they were before, say, 2015, then there's no reason why Thomas Cook can't have a very strong, 2018.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Just look at the chart there, and it's almost like just rolling over. You know, it's like almost a topped a little bit at like 120, 125. And I'm interested to see how far it goes here. But you know, whether if those results boost the price or whether they'll push them down further. But I wouldn't like to call it either way here. It's, you know, it's a trend that's broken a little bit. It's having a correction. Okay, and what's next then, Connor?
Yeah, finally, we've got Mothercare, which sort of is the opposite of those other two stocks. It's had an absolute dog of a year, really. It wasn't been doing too badly for the first 4 or 5 months of the year. I think in May it was hitting maybe a one-year high or something like that, maybe 14, 15-month high. Since then, however, it's really struggled. I think it's now, or maybe yesterday, the day before, was at, I think, lows not seen since 2000. Just, you know, it was a retail stock that was already struggling in a retail environment that has become increasingly tricky in the UK in the last couple of months. However, there are signs of a turnaround, sort of, in Mothercare. Back in May, it announced a fairly substantial sort of restructuring-ish plan. It said it was going to reduce the number of stores in the UK from 150 to just 70, as it sort of continues to pivot online. I think a few years ago, Mothercare, maybe at its peak, had 400 stores, so it shows how much they've had to cut down in the last few years. Mm-hmm. It also further narrowed its focus in sort of its, like, product focus on sort of expectant parents, newborns and toddlers. So now it's cut, previously its sort of age range of its products went up to sort of, I guess, up to 10 years old, and now it only goes up to 4 years old. So it's really focusing on that niche of, you know, people who are expecting babies or have just had babies, basically. Mm-hmm. In terms of its sort of full-year figures, the UK like-for-likes were up 1.1%, which isn't bad, but it was down on the 3.6% growth managed the year before. However, international like-for-likes were down 4.1%. And sort of its international division has been, specifically, it's sort of the economic uncertainty in the Middle East has consistently been the thing that sort of marred any turnaround in the UK, really. But total group sales, I think, were down 2.2% to 667 million. But again, that's going to be related to reducing its number of stores in the UK. Pre-tax profit, underlying pre-tax profit, was up 1% to 19.7 million, which isn't too bad. And in terms of the first quarter in July, again, there were signs that this restructuring plan in the UK was sort of working. Like-for-like sales in the UK were up 1.9%. Obviously, that's an improvement on the 1.1% seen in May. Again, the international arm dragged it down. I think on a constant currency basis, international sales were down 8.3%. Again, mainly due to the issues in the Middle East. But on an actual exchange rate, they're up 2.2%. I think also international online sales were pretty healthy. I think at actual exchange rates, they're up 78% and 58% on constant exchange rates. So that's, you know, again, shows that they're moving in the right direction in terms of trying to pivot on online. In terms of Thursday's half-year figures, I think further improvement in UK like-for-likes, if we can maybe push that number over the 2% mark, and a decent interim profit figure could maybe overshadow the likely weaknesses in the international arm. But I guess it really depends on the size of the fall in the international division. But again, it's fallen so low recently that there might be enough investors out there that take a punt on it on signs of, you know, recovery in the UK arm and, you know, continued like-for-like growth in the UK arm. There might be enough investors out there. Like, we've seen clients buying around the 85p mark. Like, it won't take a lot necessarily to cause people to go into it. But I will say, though, I guess it has fallen quite sharply in the last week or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
basically,
yeah.
You know, it's not been a great month for retail stocks in general. You've had, like, you know, inflation figures and wage growth figures and retail sales figures this week not painting a particularly healthy picture for the UK consumer. So there are those sort of more macro issues bothering the stock, as well as its own restructuring issues to wade through.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm scrolling back on my chart to find when it was last at this price, 86 pence. My chart doesn't go back far enough. So I'm literally back as I scroll back on the daily chart, 2008. Literally, this is an all-time low. So you'd think any bad news is pretty much priced in, I think, I would say, if you say. So, you know, it may have a bit of a downfall. But yes, it's tumbled last from a pound down to 86 pence in the last few sessions. So, you know, is it priced in? You'd think it's oversold on the RSI on the chart. So you may think so. But, you know, I'd wait until the figures come out, to be honest. Marvellous stuff, Connor. Thanks for that. Have a nice week. Speak next week.
Talk next week. Thanks very much.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were, at five, Sirius Minerals. Are you serious? Yes, I am. SXX. At four, Tullow Oil, TLW. At 3, Zenanga Iron, ZIOC. At 2, Angus Energy, ANGS. And number 1, most followed company on Vox Markets over the last 24 hours, is a company I wrote a blog about on the weekend. Send it out. So maybe that helped. It's Codal Minerals, K-O-D. By all means, check out the blog. Okay, top 5 most liked RNSs. And I've got to say, there's 2 or 3 at joint 5th. There we go, it's quite exciting, eh? Hey. At 5, Hemogenix Pharmaceuticals. That's H-E-M-O, University of Oxford Collaboration. At 5 also, Sunrise Resources. That's an update junction project. At 5, also there, Codal Minerals, K-O-D, board appointment. At 4, Having Bid Resources, H-U-M, commissioning update of the Yanfolila gold mine. At 3, Sound Energy, S-O-U, Eastern Morocco, aerial gradiometry results. Gradiometry? No idea. Gradiometry, I'm assuming. At 2, STX Energy, updates on Cebu and Garb Center permits. And number 1, most liked RNS, was from Talao Energy. That's Talao Secure's new Botswana cornerstone investor. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.